Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
All right, thanks for being with us here. A good first hour, great first hour with Steve Ray on the Eucharist. And this hour, we are going to shift gears a little bit and talk about atheism, actually answering atheism. If you have been the beneficiary of the gift of faith, well, thank God for that. But it's pretty sure bet that you, like the rest of us, have friends, maybe family members, loved ones, neighbors, coworkers, who just simply, for whatever reason, and we don't know, it's a mystery, they just deny that there is a God at all. And it really becomes sometimes a point of pain for many of us, especially if someone is very close to us. And so if you have any questions about this, you can call right now. Trent Horn is going to answer your questions at 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. When Trent is on the program, often we ask that only atheists call or only certain groups of people, but this one is wide open across the board to anybody who would like to call. 888-318-7884. Trent is an apologist and speaker at Catholic Answers, and he has authored a book called Answering Atheism, also Hard Sayings, and his brand new book is called Why We're Catholic. Trent, good to be working with you again. Welcome.
Jerry, good to be working with you as well.
Hey, before we go, I forgot to do this in the first hour, and I know, Trent, that you will join me in congratulating Darren Delosier, the head of the radio department at Catholic Answers, and his wife, Rena. Today is their second wedding anniversary, and they've got their second child due in a couple of months. So a very beautiful occasion, Trent, today that they are celebrating that second wedding anniversary.
Beautiful indeed. Always great to bless the sacrament of marriage with the gift of a child. So definitely congratulations to them. And hopefully, and we ask that our listeners pray for them and all the staff at Catholic Answers, many different families of all types, working hard in this apostolate to share the gospel, both in our own families and to your family. So, but yeah, definitely a lot of blessings to them.
Yeah. All right, so 888-318-7884, your questions on atheism. We're going to take those in a few minutes. Trent and I are going to have a little conversation about this topic first. And Trent, here's where I'd like to start. Do you think that this atheism, we see sort of a growing, trend, fad? It's almost trendy for a lot of people to say they're atheists nowadays. How do you see this?
Yeah, I see that it's definitely a label people have been more willing to adopt in the past 10, 20 years than maybe in the past 30 years, at least from the early part of the millennia till now, when we saw the rise of the new atheism with books like The God Delusion, The End of Faith, and also with atheistic arguments and rhetoric proliferating in abundance on the internet has empowered a lot of people who spend their time on the internet, and I think it'd be an interesting sociological study for someone to do, but I have a guess that atheists, on average, may spend more time on the internet than Christians, actually. There certainly seems to be, when I look at comment sections on websites or at news aggregate websites like Reddit, there seems to be a disproportionate number of atheists versus what things like the Pew Forum and Gallup polls tell us the number of atheists there are. I've heard different numbers from 2 to 5%, but I think there was a recent article that's come out saying the number could be as high as 20 or 30%. It just depends on how you define the term atheist, but it's certainly much more popular now to come out and be a activist atheist, if you will, to make it a core part of your identity and community than it was at least prior to the internet.
Well, and speaking of that trend, internet technology and all of this, that has also made it possible for those of us who do believe to get our message out there. And the proofs of the existence of God and so many other things. If people read the evidence, the arguments the philosophers make and so forth, it really is rather disarming. So I'm curious, are they kind of purposely shying away from some of this stuff, or do they just not know that it's there?
I don't know. I've met some atheists, and I think this has happened frequently on this program. When an atheist calls in, I'll ask them why they're an atheist, and they say, well, there's no evidence for God. I've never seen any evidence for God, never seen a good argument for God. And I'll ask them, well, what's the best argument or the best evidence you've come across, and what's wrong with it? And they don't have anything to share. It's just an assumption they make. Others who are familiar, there's some atheists who read Christian apologetics, or at the very least watch debates and Christian apologetic videos and form responses to this. And I've watched several of these on the internet and read these different blogs. So I'm familiar. There are some atheists, you know, who are simply not aware of, they really haven't carefully read any defenses of the existence of God at all, frankly. Others who have, or at least look at popularized versions of them, reply, but I think that they're just not aware of the logical fallacies that they commit in their replies or the double standards they use in evidence. And so I try to point this out, for example, in my book, Answering Atheism. I point out where even atheists have to correct other atheists on how to reply to the various arguments for and against the existence of God. And so, and I think it's something that we can reason together. The First Vatican Council even says that man can know God exists by reason alone. Of course, sometimes he's born into conditions where it's difficult for him to come to that knowledge, but you can know God exists by reason alone. But ultimately, entering into a relationship with God and coming to salvation through God and Jesus Christ, that's something that is a gift of faith, a gift God gives to all people in different degrees. God wants to save all people, but we have to be open to receiving that gift.
Is there, you probably heard this before, I have to presume, is there any kind of a simple answer to somebody who says, well, you know what, if God wanted everybody to know that he exists, he'd make it a whole lot more obvious? I mean, we do, like you said, the First Vatican Council, I know in the Book of Romans, it says, you know, we are without excuse for not knowing that God exists. But a lot of people might say, well, you know, there should be some kind of like really unmistakable evidence for this staring me right in the face, if you will. I don't know. Have you heard that before?
Yes, it's a common argument. That's a popular version of an argument I've heard, that if God existed, then there would be more evidence for him. There's actually a academic version of this argument that's promoted by an atheistic philosopher of religion named J.L. Schellenberg, and that's called the argument from divine hiddenness. And that's the idea that if God existed, there wouldn't be reasonable non-belief, but there is reasonable non-belief, therefore God doesn't exist. And so how do you answer an argument like that? Now, some people will take the approach to say there are no reasonable atheists everywhere. In fact, some Christians, particularly those in the Reformed tradition, will say that atheists really do know deep down God exists, and they're just suppressing that knowledge. And from my interactions with many atheists, that may be true for some people, but I don't think it's true for all people who claim to be atheists or say God doesn't exist. I've met atheists who really, really want God to exist. So the other way to answer the argument is to say, well, why can't God allow reasonable non-belief to exist? If you read in the Catechism, for example, the church teaches that it's possible for non-Catholics to be saved, including atheists. Doesn't mean that it will automatically happen. So if someone, you know, is not necessarily damned because they never come to know that God exists, God could allow that non-belief for various reasons. For example, he may want to protect that we have free wills, that if God made his existence obvious, that could compromise our ability to choose to follow him. Just like when you're driving down the freeway and you see a police officer on the side of the road, you slow down, but not because you freely choose really to love your fellow man and obey the speed limit, because you know the cop is right there and you don't want to get caught. So that could be one reason, and other philosophers of religion have put forward other reasons to think that God would allow reasonable non-belief. But I would say, though, I think, though, that the vast majority of people, both in the present and throughout history, have come to know that God exists. So I would say that God has provided sufficient evidence. It's not about, well, if God existed, there would be this kind of evidence, and that evidence doesn't exist, therefore I'm not going to believe. Well, you have to look at the evidence as it is now. If there's things in the world that can only be explained by the existence of God, then logically we should accept that conclusion and not demand evidence that doesn't exist or fit our particular tastes.
Right. Yeah, God's not going to go door to door. Ding dong. Hi, I'm God.
He could, but and he may do that for some people, but we haven't seen that he will simply do that for everyone. God may want there to be in a relationship with him a pursuit. That may be another reason he allows non-belief, or he remains hidden or not, you know, completely obvious to people.
Right.
So there's a sort of drama in salvation as it is, which of course is a shameless plug for my colleague Jimmy Akin's book, The Drama of Salvation, which our listeners should check out also.
Trent Horn here with us this hour. We're going to get to a break in a minute. Then to your calls, 888-318-7884. Answering atheism is our topic today. Real quick before the break, Trent, do you have a go-to argument? I mean, like I mentioned, the philosophers, Thomas's five ways and all of that. Not that they're convoluted and hard to understand, but they're somewhat kind of academic and all of that. Do you have a popular, like, hey, you know, if you're talking to somebody on an elevator, you're going upstairs, six floors, you got about 15 seconds to try and, you know, share with them the existence of God. Is there something that you like to go to?
Yeah, I think what I like to say is, look, if God existed, what would we want for evidence? We'd want something really big and amazing. People always say, well, I want miracles, you know, amputated limb grows back from nothing. Well, what's the biggest thing that I can think of to explain? Well, how about reality, the universe itself? So I go to saying that what explains the fact there is something rather than nothing? That requires an explanation. And if the universe came to be from nothing, that would require an explanation beyond space and time, both of which would logically flow into a timeless, an eternal, immaterial, all-powerful being we call God. And then I flesh out the arguments more. But I would say that I like to think big and say, what explains the universe? If we seek explanations, God is the most logical one. And that's where I like to take the argument.
All right. Hang on. We're going to get to your calls. Vincent, Honey, Josh, James, and we have a line open, 888-318-7884, talking about answering atheism today with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live. Love to hear from anybody. Maybe you were someone who held the atheistic position, and through the actions of God's grace and your own searching and research, maybe you have come to faith or at least belief in God. Again, maybe, as we say, you engage in conversations with people and they deny the existence of God, and that kind of shuts down the conversation. Maybe you just want some simple steps to at least get that conversation started. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. Be right back.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Hey everyone, this is Carlo Broussard, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, you can get a collection of 5 exclusive audio presentations added to your order for free. Subscribe today at 818-487-2011. Or online at Catholic.com. Sign up for a 1-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a 2-year subscriber and we'll up the ante by dropping the price $20 and sending you a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing exclusive talks from a top-notch lineup of speakers including Chris Check, Tim Staples, Trent Horn, and Cy Kellett, and my talk, The Splendor of the Catholic Faith. That's a savings of $20 plus 5 brand new audio presentations when you sign up for a 2-year subscription to Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now. This is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to Catholic.com today.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
I'm Jerry Usher in for Cy Kellett today with Trent Horn. Answering Atheism is our topic. And Trent, we had Steve Ray on last hour. We talked about the Holy Land, and by golly, you are actually leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land coming up. Is it 2018 or...
That's right, yeah. Okay. In Easter of 2018, I'm going to be leading a 12-day pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and we're going to be spending some extra time in the city of Jerusalem. So if you ever wanted to celebrate Holy Thursday in the Upper Room, you need to sign up here. If you ever wanted to do the Stations of the Cross on the actual Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem, check this out. And we're going to do, of course, Mass, Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus' actual tomb is, and then, of course, seeing all the other sites in the Holy Land, going to Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, going to Bethlehem. So many great things to see. I'm going to be giving talks about our faith, how to go deeper into Scripture, how to defend against arguments against the person of Christ and the central mysteries of our faith. So it's going to be a wonderful experience. I hope people will sign up and take advantage of the early bird discount we have right now. And if they want to learn more, they should go to holyland2018.com. That's holyland2018.com and sign up soon to take advantage of that discount for next Easter's pilgrimage.
All right. Well, having been there a couple of times myself, folks, I can tell you, and Trent is obviously, you know, he's got a lot of, you know, knowledge and wisdom to impart. So I can't encourage you all more to go and sign up and get details at holyland2018.com with Trent Horn going to the Holy Land next Easter. And my first trip there was actually during Holy Week. So it is absolutely phenomenal. So folks, take advantage of that if at all you can. Okay, we're going to go to your straight to your calls, Answering Atheism. Vincent is in Houston, called in right away. Vincent, thanks for hanging in there with us. You're up first. How are you?
I'm doing well. By yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for the call. What can Trent help you with?
Sure. So my question is, if all morals come from God, where would an atheist say their morals come from, and how do we answer that?
Well, there are different opinions among Christians about how morality is related to God, and even some Catholics may differ in how they articulate how morality is related to God. But what I would say is that morality doesn't come from God simply by virtue of his commands. He doesn't just arbitrarily will what is good and what is bad by what he commands and then writes down in the Bible for us to know. Rather, I would say that morality comes from God because God is perfect goodness itself. God just is the standard of goodness because he's just perfect being, perfect love, knowledge, and wisdom. So if God is the standard of goodness, then he creates the world and orders it towards a certain good end. And within the nature of any being, one can know how that being ought to function properly. And so that would be the foundation of what Catholics call natural law. Now, natural law was something that even non-Christians understood, people like the philosopher Aristotle. But through the work of later Christian and Jewish and Muslim philosophers, the idea of natural law found that its ultimate basis would be the eternal law found in God. So ultimately, goodness and right and obligation come from the fact that God created the world and the world ought to be a certain way. It's not an accident. But how do atheists know morality? How would they explain morality? First, I would say that an atheist can be a moral person, a good person. There are many atheists who are very charitable, kind, and loving, and they can know morality even if they don't believe in God. And why is that? Well, because God writes morality into our very natures. In Romans 2:14-16, St. Paul says that the Gentiles, or the non-Jews, knew the law of Moses. Even though they weren't given the Ten Commandments, they still knew the law because God wrote it on their hearts. And so an atheist may know this through his conscience, for example, that he tries to do what he thinks is right. Now, for atheists, when they try to explain morality, there are two different ways they might go about it. First, They might try to ground the existence of objective moral truths in something that's not God, like evolution, we evolved to be moral, or morals come from society, or that morals are just these unexplained facts in the universe. And in my book, Answering Atheism, I show why those different alternatives don't succeed. They can't explain why there's this universal binding obligation to be moral. Or what an atheist might do, like J.L. Mackey does in his book, The Miracle of Theism, is to say, you're right, morality ultimately comes from God, but since God doesn't exist, morality is just an illusion. It's just feelings we have, but there are no objective moral facts. This statement, it's always wrong to torture children for fun, it's not true or false, it's just illusory. And so those are different ways one might go about it. So if I was to talk to an atheist about morality, I'd try to show that objective morality does exist, and natural foundations for it don't explain its universal and imperative features. It requires us to be a certain way. We ought to do something, and you can't really get ought in an accidental universe that just is. So otherwise, I'd recommend, I think it's chapters 14, 15 in my book, Answering Atheism, where I think I actually spend three chapters on God and morality and go in depth on that. So is that a helpful answer, Vincent?
Yes, and so essentially you're just saying that morals are just written onto us, and since God is this perfect, all-good being, is that that's how we ought to be, that's like what we should be like.
Yeah, I would say that in this life we have an understanding of things that are good and bad, or at least helpful or hurtful. But we also come to understand there are just certain ways we ought not to be, that we understand that human beings deserve to be treated with intrinsic dignity. We, especially in the West, we're very fond of the idea that humans should have equal rights, which is a very odd thing because there's nothing really that equal about us. If you say it's just our DNA, our human species, well, why does a human species matter? Ultimately, I'd say it's because it's created in the image and likeness of God. So I would look at it in that way, and that, yeah, an atheist knows morality just as somebody who you know, has never studied biology. I think C.S. Lewis or another person, another Christian philosopher, used this analogy that might be actually Glenn Peoples. He's a online blogger and philosopher, that someone who lives in Papua New Guinea who's never even read a biology textbook talking about how internal organs work, he has no idea that lungs exist or how lungs work, but he knows that he knows how to breathe because it's written into his very being, even though he doesn't know the ultimate foundations of why he's able to breathe. Just as human beings, we know deep down there are things that are right and things that are wrong, ways that we ought to be, even if we don't know the ultimate foundations of where those particular feelings come from. And I think morality is another clue towards the existence of God, and that's why I talk about it in my book, Answering Atheism. So thanks very much, Vincent, for the call, and hopefully you'll call back another time.
Yeah, thanks, Vincent, very much from Houston. We're going to go to Seneca Falls, New York next. Honey, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a friend of mine. He's a total atheist, and I'm a Christian, and he can't understand why I believe the Bible is true. And I said, because God wouldn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I can explain to him that the Bible is true, since he is a total atheist.
Right, sure. Well, honey, first I would point out to him, and by the way, I love your names, because otherwise, if anyone else is listening to this conversation, they might worry that I'm showing an odd amount of affection for a complete stranger on the radio. So, honey, listen up. All right. That's enough of that. Here's what I would say. First, I point out to him that the Bible is not a single book. It's funny, sometimes atheists say, I don't believe in the Bible. Well, what do you mean by that? The Bible is a collection of 72 or 73, depending on how you count, 73 different books and letters written over a long period of time. Some of them, for example, like the book of Proverbs, just talk about wisdom, how to be wise, how not to, you know, let bad things happen to you, how not to get scammed by somebody, for example, how to live a happy life. I mean, if there's some wisdom in there that says, here's how you should be happy, you know, don't spend all your money getting drunk or, you know, doing, you know, bad things, focus on, you know, working hard and trusting others, not lying, not stealing. I would start with common ground and say we do at least agree with like those parts of the Bible. Then other parts I would say, well, look, looking at the Bible, are there things you can at least agree with. Like, the Bible talks about there was an ancient Roman Empire. You know, there was the city of Jerusalem. You could point to a map and say, well, here's Jerusalem, and it was there 2,000 years ago. Is the Bible right about that? Then I might ask him, you could ask him, do you think, even if you don't believe in the Bible, do you think the Bible is right? There was a man named Jesus who lived 2,000 years ago. And just focus on Jesus, saying, do you at least agree this guy Jesus existed? Because if Jesus never existed, then how did people start believing in Jesus? How did this start in the first place? So you could start with something very minimal, saying, do you at least believe there was this guy named Jesus, and he goes around, and people believe he's performed miracles, he says he's God, and then people say he rose from the dead. You know, why would they say that if it didn't really happen? And so for me, honey, when I talk to other people, and they say, why do you believe in the Bible? What I say is, if I read the Bible and it's just a collection of human documents, I can know from that there was a man named Jesus who rose from the dead. And if he rose from the dead, I know he gave us a church, and that church gave us the Bible, and I know I can trust the Bible that he gave us. And so if you'd like to learn more about that, check out my book, Why We're Catholic. I have a great chapter called Why We Believe in the Bible.
Thanks, honey, for the call from Seneca Falls, New York. Great to hear from you. Scott is in Japan, and he is next. And when we come back, I've got details about something you don't want to miss.
Catholic Answers Live.
Not so long ago, atheistic ideology was something that was spoken of only in private conversation or halls of higher learning. But not any longer. From bumper stickers to billboards to bestsellers, atheism has raised its voice and taken its place in our culture. In Answering Atheism, Trent Horn offers a fresh and useful resource for the God debate, combining a thorough refutation of atheist claims with a skillfully constructed case for theism based on reason and common sense. Meticulously researched and street-tested, Answering Atheism offers a charitable approach that respects atheists' sincerity and goodwill, making this book suitable not just for believers, but for skeptics and seekers, too. Order Answering Atheism today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Also available in ebook format.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Debbie Giorgiani.
I'm a cradle Catholic, went to Catholic school, and I never really wandered from the faith. In fact, after having a taste of working in corporate America, I was literally pulled toward a more meaningful work. I began serving in ministry when I was just 21 years old, and I've never looked back since. I was not fulfilled working in a job where I couldn't talk about Jesus. I am most complete when the topic of conversation is God.
Take two with Jerry and Debbie, Monday through Saturday, noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
We are back on Catholic Answers Live. Jerry Usher, a co-host of the show you just heard the announcement about on many of these EWTN affiliates. Love to have you join me and Debbie at noon Eastern, and the show re-airs at midnight Eastern time. And a best of, if there is such a thing with our show, we hope there is, Saturdays at noon Eastern time. I mentioned going into the break some very exciting news, and this is something I hope that you'll pay attention to and act upon. The annual Catholic Answers magazine subscription drive has been going on now for a couple of weeks, and already so many people have called to sign up for a year, 2 years, and you are really going to be the beneficiary of the great articles and features and all of the information in there, each and every issue. And if you sign up for a one-year subscription right now, they will take $10 off the normal price. A two-year subscriber gets $20 off and a customized Catholic Answers flash drive that has five talks from some of the great Catholic Answers speakers, including our guest this hour, Trent Horn, Carlo, Cy, Tim, Chris Check, the president of Catholic Answers. And if you would like to take advantage of this special offer, you can call 1-844-589-1597, 844-589-1597. Or if you're more the internet type, you can go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. I know that Father's Day has come and gone, but hey, it's not too late if you want to give Dad another gift. Or maybe you forgot. Maybe you forgot about Father's Day or just didn't have time. So please check out the Catholic Answers Magazine subscription drive at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. All right, your questions on atheism for Trent Horn continue. We're going to Japan, and Scott is listening on the EWTN website. Hi, Scott. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm glad to be able to get through. So my question, and I could say so much beforehand, is simply, why would God deny us knowledge about him and instead require blindly trusting human beings? That knowledge is true, justified belief that would be unreasonable to deny. And that's precisely the problem with, like, all of the arguments for God. They rest on uncertain premises that it's not unreasonable to deny. So we don't have knowledge of God, I think, apart from personal experience. And yet God refuses to give us this personal experience. Like, when you go and receive the Eucharist, the whole last hour was about trying to sort of do mental gymnastics around the fact that it just appears to be bread and wine. And you have to tell yourself that it's Jesus's body and blood, for example. You don't experience that. And without experience, it seems to me all you're left with is trusting what other human beings are telling you about the past, for example.
Okay, Scott. Once again, thank you for calling. I know you've called several times the show, and I'm happy to address the questions you have and help you to seek out the truth, because it seems like you have a concern for seeking out the truth. First, I'll allude very briefly to the Eucharist, which isn't the topic of the show today. And this also kind of goes back to your definition of knowledge, which I think may be causing a problem here in our discussion. You said that knowledge is justified true belief that would be unreasonable to deny. I'm concerned that when you add in there unreasonable, that puts the standard for justification too high. I mean, there's many things we know, we would say that we know, you know, even from personal testimony, that could still be reasonable to deny. Beliefs we have about how to solve certain ethical problems, political problems, even things like personal testimony. If someone tells me their name, for example, do I have 100% proof that's their name? Is it maybe I misunderstood that's their middle name, and I erroneously think that it's their first name that they go by? Because it's interesting what you said about the Eucharist. Like, well, it just looks like bread to me. We have to trust other people. You know, it's kind of like my son got a vaccine today, and when I look at it, I just see a clear liquid, you know, and a needle causing him a lot of pain. I don't see beneficial health coming from that. Now, I know that's the case because I trust, one, the arguments put forward by epidemiologists and immunologists saying that vaccines are effective, even though some people actually do deny that, you know. And two, I trust that evidence and the testimony of other people who are experts in that. So when it comes to the Eucharist, if Jesus is an expert, if he's God, then I would trust his testimony. But that's a little further away. Your question is more about, how do we know if God exists? So for me, if an argument for God, the premises are more likely to be true than false, why not trust them? Why isn't that seems to be a good standard we have for knowing lots of other things in this life. Well, it's more likely that's true than false. Why not have that as a standard?
I would say that suffering personally and worldwide, looking at other suffering, shows that the premises are more likely to be false than true. that to be Christian, you have to have this blind trust in spite of the evidence rather than because of it. Because there is so much suffering that God chooses not to explain, not to alleviate, so these premises are more likely to be false than true.
But how does that follow? For example, one of the premises in an argument, let's say an argument for the beginning of the universe, is that whatever begins to exist has a cause for its existence. Now, people have counterexamples to that, and I think those can be explained. And I think that premise we know from just metaphysical thinking and empirical observation is probably true, that, yeah, when things begin to exist, we look for a cause. We don't see uncaused events, and quantum physics aside, you know, which can, I think, can be explained, it seems more likely to be true than false. But what you just said, how does the existence of evil and suffering in the world detract from my certainty in that premise about things beginning to exist or design in the universe? They don't seem to be related. How would my trust in the proofs for God waver even if there's evil and suffering? At most, evil and suffering might cause me to doubt God's goodness, but they wouldn't affect those other arguments, right?
Well, sure. So then answering these two things you just said first, the Big Bang, we don't know what was before the singularity that we're extrapolating backwards to. So we don't actually know whether the universe had a beginning in time. And of course, the second law of thermodynamics certainly implies that. But again, we don't know that the second law of thermodynamics is universally valid everywhere, always. It's a model that's proven useful for us so far, but it's an assumption to say that it's like a fact.
Scott, hold on. It's a law of thermodynamics. It's something that we generally believe to always be true. For example, the second law of thermodynamics, the laws of thermodynamics in general, we trust to believe that here's a good example of that. There is no such thing as a perpetual motion machine. In fact, the U.S. Patent Office are you familiar with the concept of a perpetual motion machine?
Right, sure. I mean, I've studied statistical mechanics, and I know that we've never seen an example of the second law of thermodynamics being, proven false. But my point there is that it's a mathematical model of the universe that we have put onto paper. It's not your philosophy of science. You are assuming that our mathematical models. That we have correctly identified how the universe actually exists in itself. And instead, my position on science is that our models are simply modeling our observations so far, and that it would be an assumption, a leap of faith, to say that our mathematical models are in fact 100% correct and won't ever be altered in the future.
Well, no, okay. I agree that science is always tentative and it's open to revision. But it seems to me, for example, if someone told you they had created a perpetual motion machine, what probability would you give them that their claim is true?
Well, I would.
Based on our knowledge of the second law of thermodynamics.
Well, I would say less than 50%, but I would want to see it. I'd want to, show me, its work. Let's see your paper that you've published on. Let's look at the details. So I can't just write it off in advance.
But Scott, that just seems so interesting. That it seems to me, you're having trouble believing that God exists or following any of the arguments for God. Because it seems like you don't believe in anything with a lot of certainty. If you don't believe in laws of causation or thermodynamics or principles of existence with any certainty, then I could see the problems you have in coming to know God exists. That if you're just skeptical about everything, because for me, my prior belief that someone's invented a perpetual motion machine would be 0.0000 hundreds of zeros and a one, that's not what's happened, because it flies in the face of all the evidence that we have. The same as the idea of someone saying that things can pop into existence without a cause. But I'm just trying to think, in order for you, and I'd like you to come to know God. So, I mean, we're getting close to our third break here. but I want to move this into a positive direction, because I know you've called several times. So I feel like you want to pursue the truth on this subject. So let me start with just one question. If God existed, would you be happy about that fact if it were proven? You would like there to be a God?
Absolutely. You know, I'm still practicing the Christian faith because I'm wanting it to be true. I just don't have any knowledge or evidence to think that it actually is true. In other words, I'm being Christian right now in spite of the evidence, in spite of experience. It would be wonderful if the church were correct and, you know, all these, I mean, and so forth.
And for you, it seems to be that the in spite of, because in the absence of would be, if you think all the proofs don't work, that would just be in the absence of evidence. In spite of would be counterbalancing evidence. And your concern is there's all this evil and suffering in the world. And so that weighs against God.
Well, I would say not evil, because I'm afraid you're going to go down that moral facts argument, but rather pain. You know, like the more you pray, the worse it gets. And so
is that always true?
Think,
is that always true?
I would say that it's a general rule that if you think, for example, politically, the rate of feticide is increasing, it's not decreasing. You know, we have over-the-counter medications now to end a fetus's life. And that's so I would say generally, yes, the world's getting worse, not better.
Well, I guess I would probably, there's different ways one can measure if something's better or worse. Abortions in the United States, at least, have actually been decreasing steadily since the 1990s. I think also, if you look over the past 2,000 years, belief in God, belief in monotheism has grown tremendously, even though pagans lived in darkness and didn't know God. We've seen increases, even in science and technology, shows that man has come to understood his own nature and grown in that. We've seen growth and moral progress. So there are things that are bad, certainly. One could argue certain areas have gotten worse. But for me, it's funny you mentioned the moral facts argument. The fact that we have a desire to move towards a kind of perfection. We understand there's a way things ought to be. We should progress. We're not just animals here accidentally, that we see this suffering around us and we feel like I am supposed to do something about that. I think that's good evidence for a command that's been given to us from a source of perfect goodness itself. So something to think about. And you know, Scott, definitely keep, I commend you for holding to the Christian faith, that I think you see a glimmer of truth and goodness there, that you want that candle, that little light, to be burned more with kindling and oxygen. And I think the only thing I can do for you now is pray for that oxygen of faith, for that glimmer I do see when you do call. And so I hope our listeners will do that. And, you know, if you hang on, I would love to, maybe our call screener can get you our email. I'm sure you seem like a very well-read individual, but I'd enjoy sending you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic, if you wanted to check that out and you stay on the line, our call screener speaks with you.
All right, hold on a minute, Scott. Give that information to our call screener, and we will have more calls from Josh and Paul and Debbie in just a minute. Catholic Answers Live, Trent Horn here, answering atheism on this Monday afternoon broadcast. Stay with us. More straight ahead.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
Dr. Peter Krapes says, answering atheism gets high grades on the three R's. It's readable, reasonable, and researched. Its defense of the cosmological argument has depth and detail, yet it's not so technical that you need to take a philosophy course to comprehend it. Order your copy of Answering Atheism today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel." St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 5, Jesus went up a mountain before a large crowd and began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." He then continued with several other blesseds. Blessed are they who mourn, blessed are the meek, and so forth. These are the eight Beatitudes, eight ways of being happy. So what is it about such things that would make us happy, especially being persecuted for justice' sake? All of the Beatitudes are expressions of concern for others. They are eight ways of showing love. Our Blessed Lord is telling us that happiness lies only in doing what we were designed for. We were designed to love Him above all, and each other for His sake. When we do this, we are most truly ourselves. Better yet, we are most truly His. He promises that our reward in heaven will be great. Of course it will be great. We will finally know the fullness of His divine embrace. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
More of your questions for Trent Horn, and we're going to go to Des Moines, Iowa. Paul, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Hello, Paul. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. It's the first time I've called in, but I really like this topic. In my understanding of atheism, I believe that in the last few years it has evolved somewhat to become almost an anti-Christian type of belief that has its own religiosity. And I guess I was looking to compare that to where I believe that atheism started out as more along the agnostic of a non-belief in anything supernatural. So I was kind of wondering if you could do a touch of a compare-contrast for me for a clear understanding of those.
Sure. The terms atheist and agnostic are sometimes difficult to define in the atheistic community, and people have different descriptions of their terms. I think you're correct, though, that in the past, atheists were more likely to hold on to the agnostic label. That label itself is somewhat new. I believe it comes from the 19th century. I think it was from Thomas Huxley who coined the term. The idea being an atheist, classically, an atheist was someone who denied the existence of God or said there is no God. Whereas an agnostic is someone who suspends judgment. They don't say God exists or that he does not exist. When it comes to the question, does God exist? The theist says yes. The atheist says no. And the agnostic says, I don't know. What's interesting, though, is that many atheists today, people who say that they're atheists, when you ask them to answer the question, does God exist, they don't say no. They'll often say, I don't know, or I don't believe. They'll just say, I don't believe in God. It hasn't been proven. But once again, the honest answer to that question is, I don't know, not no. Many atheists are fond of saying, well, there's no evidence for God. Well, that doesn't prove there is no God. There's no credible evidence for aliens. That doesn't mean there's no aliens in the universe. You have to be agnostic. Say, I don't know. And so atheists get into these different things. They try to say, well, I'm an agnostic atheist. I lack a belief, but I don't know there's no God. And to me, that becomes very complicated and unnecessary. Today's modern atheism, truly it is agnosticism for most people. They don't know if there's a God. They will say there's no Christian God sometimes because they think the Bible is false, things like that. But they want the term atheist because I think it has a more forceful impact and it's just hipper than agnostic. So I think that's what we see out there. And actually, in chapter one of my book, Answering Atheism, I discuss these terms at a more in-depth level. But when I'm talking to an atheist, I try not to argue too much about the terms. However you want to call yourself, that's fine. Let's just talk about the arguments and the evidence and, you know, see what goes from there.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Paul, thank you for the call. Debbie is next in Scranton, Pennsylvania, listening there on AM 750. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for calling Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, guys. Trent, I am planning on going to a book signing this weekend with Lloyd Evans, who wrote The Reluctant Apostate. He's an ex-Jehovah's Witness, as I also am. But I wanted to know, what is the best way to approach somebody who seems to have gone into atheism after an abusive situation with a cult of a religion, because they've got all of this, like, really horrible baggage from the religious experience?
Yeah. I think it's a great question, Debbie. I think for a lot of people who reject the existence of God or desire atheism, that for many people, there may be logical reasons or they have rational doubts about the issue. But for others, there's a lot of emotional hurt, and especially someone who was raised in a dysfunctional religious home or was raised in a religion that was compulsive or abusive. I know for Jehovah's Witnesses, there can be a lot of psychological trauma for ex-Jehovah's Witnesses because the Jehovah's Witnesses practice shunning. So if you become an apostate, or even if you violate one of the teachings of the Jehovah's Witnesses, such as by accepting a blood transfusion or celebrating a wedding or a holiday or a birthday party for your child, if you do this continually, you can be shunned and friends and family will simply act like you don't exist. And that can be very, very difficult and make someone think that, well, all religion is bad. I don't want to have anything to do with religion. I just want to be an atheist. But I think that I would encourage the person to validate them. You're hurting, and it's okay for you to feel hurt and angry, and I'd like to help you get out of that. And sometimes when we're hurt and we're angry, this happens to me all the time. I mean, it's got to be many times I can think of where I'm angry, and then I think and do something irrational, because we don't want to be angry. And so, you know, we'll do this. I mean, and trying to point that out to the person in as gentle and compassionate as we can, you know, to say, you know, imagine you met somebody who is in an abusive relationship with their a girl with her boyfriend, and he's abusive and he's terrible. And she gets out of that and she says, I'm done with all men. I'll never give another man a chance. You know, I'm done with all of them. I mean, you'd rightly point out, hey, well, I'm sorry what happened to you, but there are many good men out there. You shouldn't tarnish them all with this one bad experience. Or, you know, you go to a hospital and the doctor practices malpractice. Say, I'm never going to a hospital again. Well, just because there was a bad doctor doesn't refute the general truth that modern Western medicine is good and it helps us and it makes us healthy. So I think by using examples like that, we can show, don't you see that just because there may be one bad religion or one bad person practicing a certain religion, such as even Catholicism, it doesn't follow religion as a whole or any particular religion like Catholicism is false or bad. So those might be the gentle analogies I try to use, but I think it's important also just to hear the person out and let them process what's happened to them before we can point them towards a more healing path to go down. So is that a helpful answer?
Yeah, I think that is, because Lloyd has a lot of videos on the shunning issue on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And you can see that he still does have a lot of pent-up anger.
Yeah.
And it's justifiable, because I went through the whole... I'm actually being shunned by my whole family right now, mm-hmm. too, yeah. Because of coming into the church. And the sad thing is that he's only been away from the Witnesses now for maybe about 5 years. And mm-hmm. I can speak from experience, because there was a time when I didn't want anybody to tell me anything about morality, anything, because I had been so abused within the yeah. Watchtower's system of control that I just did not want to have anybody, you know, just, you know, having that kind of authority over me ever again.
Oh, sure. It's the same as the example I used earlier, the someone who has been with an abusive partner in a relationship or a marriage. It's going to be very difficult for them to have trust and to open up that trust and intimacy in the future. And so that's where we have to help people to see that it's natural to feel this way, but it's important to work on these feelings so they don't inhibit us from having healthy relationships or healthy belief systems in the future. Otherwise, if we turn in on ourselves, we can be our own worst enemy. I mean, there's two options here if you go to atheism. One, you could simply be man on his own. It's just me. I don't need anybody else. But if you spend a lot of time alone in your head and it's just you, man is a social animal, and you'll be worse for the wear if you do that. But if you seek out community, any community can wrong you. Look in the atheist community. There's many accusations at atheistic conferences where women are sexually harassed. There's atheists arguing all the time online about other atheists who are racist or sexist. And now, of course, I'm not besmirching all atheists. There are many, many good atheists. There are some bad ones out there, just like there are bad people in general or certain bad religious people. The point is, we should not let the sins of a few tarnish the belief system of many. We must look at the belief system as it is and what is the evidence for it and against it. And I think the evidence supports the truth of the Catholic belief system, and that's why I share about it with others. And I hope you will too, and thank you so much for calling us today.
Thanks, Debbie. Josh and Anonymous, wish we had time. You can hear the music. We are running out of time. Trent Horn, thank you so much. Folks, check out the website HolyLand2018.com. If you've never been there, it's going to be a Holy Week and Easter. You're going to celebrate Easter in the Holy Land with Trent Horn and many like-minded, great Catholic brothers and sisters. HolyLand2018.com. Thanks, Trent, for being with us. I'm Jerry Escher, filling in for Cy Kellett, who will be back tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.